Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back again. You're with Dr. Harris, Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. We are rocking and rolling, rolling and rocking here on the West Coast, here in Fresno, California, better known as Mississippi Fresno. This month is Women's Month. Just want to highlight all the work that our women are doing, and or every month rather, but we know that this month is that we recognize the contribution of women. And but I do that every day. So I guess you all like the shirt I have on, huh? Good friend of mine gave me this shirt, and I just thank her for giving me this shirt. I really, really appreciate it. And so anyway, tonight we're going to be looking at the documentary of Fannie Lou Hamer. Been showing it all week, different clips. Really love that sister. She has done a lot to contribute to our society in Mississippi. She's been beat. She's been tortured, harassed. But she was one of the sisters that, you know, may not have gotten all the recognition that she deserved, you know, because, again, she's a woman. And so, you know, we have a lot of good women right now, you know, even here in Fresno, that's doing great work, as well as around the country. And so we just want to highlight, thank you all for doing what you do. A lot of you are mothers. Thank you for being mothers. And again, you with Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter show. I'm just kind of going to let this roll tonight. I'm not going to do too much talking. We'll see how far we get in the documentary. We're also this Saturday at 3 a.m. going to be looking at Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We're just going to be looking at number one for 1 hour, and then we have a discussion. You're welcome to come. It's free. We'll be having our youth there. Our youth will be giving a presentation about the colors of the red, black, and green flag. It's kind of like Saturday school. We have fun, you know, then we eat and go outside and play around. And so those of you who know me, know that I'm very conscious about our history, very conscious about what goes on with us. We're in a war right now. I'm saying we because I feel that America has thrown black people in this war that we have nothing to do with Russia, Ukraine, or however you pronounce their name. You know, and I just asked a question the other night. You know, America talks about democracy all the time. Democracy, democracy. You know, all the other countries got to have democracy. And I asked the question, I said, well, when Nelson Mandela was in prison for over 25 years unjustly, what was the support and the democracy with that? Anyway, that's a whole nother show that we're going to be doing. And hopefully I'll be speaking with Dr. Kayende to have him come on our show to kind of talk to us about, you know, why is that? Why when it comes to black people, people not running to our aid, people not running to Africa or, you know, our motherland, you know, trying to put democracy there. But, you know, when these other countries, you know, start fighting one another and all this, here we go taking all our tax money. I'm not saying the war is right, but I'm saying when things happen to our people in our country, where's the democracy at? Where's, you know, I'm told that Biden had, you know, sending medical supplies over there and bombs and guns and all that. But again, when we need help, where's the help that America's supposed to give black people? So, you know, I'm not with all that. So, you know, that's why I say, you know, you got to do for self or be a slave. Do for self or be a slave. And so we're going to go ahead and start rocking this real quick. And thank you all for tuning in tonight to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show, the number one show in the world. And we're just going to go ahead and get this show rolling. And kind of what we're talking about tonight is it's called We Never Turn Back, back in 1963, which is not long ago. SNCC, Fannie Lou Hamer, you know, they were trying to get the right to vote in Mississippi And went until 63-64 to Lyndon Johnson. Dr. King negotiated with Lyndon Johnson to sign the voting rights bill. And here's the crazy part. Every 25 years, Congress has to vote on black people if they're going to allow us to vote or not. Ain't that crazy? We're the only people in the land that Congress has to go back. 25 years. Every 25 years, they got to vote. It's not automatic. It's not automatic, y'all. Those who you are black. Congress has to vote on it. 400 years of slavery, 400 years of torture, 400 years of rape, 400 years of stealing our land, 400 years of hanging and lynching and murder. And every 25 years, Congress has to go back and decide and vote if they're going to allow us to vote. It's crazy. It's crazy. I'm just sick of this. But anyway, we're going to start this show here tonight. I don't want to prolong this, and so we'll get down to the documentary.
This picture is essentially for Americans, people who call themselves Americans. The Bibles in the South today who are trying to make democracy live. It begins with the painful and heartfelt assumption that we are not an island of perfection, but in fact, a land of imperfection in an imperfect world. Negroes are trying to register to vote and help change the situation that they're existing under today, help to bring about democracy in our land today.
Mississippi, 1963.
Are you still interested in a solar-powered generator?
For a moment, in this hillside home, they are secluded from the white segregationists who carry guns and clubs.
I've been living in a new county 52 or 3 years. Participated in everything that the county saw fit for a citizen to participate in. And also I raised my family here in the mid-county. 9 little children. I only have 2 kids now going to school here in the mid-county. I also was a president of here in the mid-county. I do think that every citizen in the mid-county should participate in elections. And I hope and trust that I will have the privilege to vote once or twice in my life.
I'm Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, and I farmed on the Marlowe Plantation for 18 years. I had charge of keeping up with the times and paying off. And I went down the 31st of August to try to register. And after I had gotten back home, Mr. Marlowe told me that I would have to go down and withdraw my registration or leave because they wasn't ready for that in Mississippi. And I said, Mr. Marlowe, I'm trying to register for myself. So I had to leave that same night after I had gone down in August. And then I spent one night with Mrs. Tucker, and after about 2 days in September, they shot in the house 15 times, thinking that I was there.
Resistance to change in the South is great. And behind the headline, there's a story of intimidation that is seldom told. The police dogs, the police brutality, the use of fire hose, other forms of intimidation to turn Negroes back is what hits the headline daily. But there's a story that is yet to be told.
Turn me round, my Lord, turn me round.
Mrs. McGee tries to make a living on a farm for herself and four teenage children.
They sent me to the hospital. They put my lane in the sewer bank. They got $1,095. They rented the other lane for $375. They put my children on welfare. When I came out of the hospital, they had taken my fence down and widened the road down through my place. They had went around and got all of my creditors, different people that I owed to trust me, and they hadn't paid anybody. I got a lawyer to straighten my business out, and he told me that he would. Well, he didn't do anything about it. He worried me about selling some of the land. I told him that I didn't want to sell the land, that I wanted to furnish so that I could farm and make a living for my children. And so they just put pressure on me. They cut the welfare check to $20 a month, then they cut it to $17 a month. They worried me so that I had a nervous breakdown in 60. I had to go back to the hospital. So when I came back home, I still tried to get a furnish. He collected all the money, rent on the place. He didn't pay the federal land back, the notes that I owed. They put pressure on me, trying to get me to sell the land. I refused. So last year, I rented a portion of the land for $200 cash. He got that $200. He didn't give us any of it.
I went down to Illinois to Reddish and vote. I got out and made my revival back. My landlord said to me, if you don't go down and take your name off the registration to move. I took his word and I moved to Drew, Mississippi. Couldn't get too much pressure to be on the landlord there. Had me to move over to Cleveland, Mississippi. After arriving to Cleveland, Mississippi, my wife, she had to go to the hospital down to Jackson. It's there on the same generation. And I didn't know what step to take. I'm still working. 9 girls here. I'm working, trying to take care of them, the best of my knowledge.
This is Mrs. Mildred Ellings. She's 32 years of age. She lived on Mr. W.D. Fields' plantation for 11 years. She's the mother of 8 children. Her children do not attend school regularly because of food, clothing, and money. Last year, Mrs. Evans made 11 bales of cotton. At the end of the year, she only received 100.
I am 17 years old. I pick 300 pounds of cotton a day.
I am 9 years old. I help my mother pick cotton. I pick 100 by day.
I am 14 years old. I help my mother pick cotton. I pick about 200 a day.
This is Mrs. P. Williams, the great-grandmother of the 5 children here. She receives a small Social Security check each month, and from this she must help support the children their mothers earn and take care of.
The reason I do, because my mother worked a crop, and I had to help her, and so I quit school so that I could help her.
Yeah. exactly 6 months, last 6 month employment compensation.
My name is Eddie Nunnery, lady of a mid county and live in the state of Mississippi. I'm going to try to register at this register office, and after going there several times, they failed me and told me I was disqualified to register. And after going there once, it was a gone fight.
Lots of people in Mid-County are afraid to go to Liberty and register or vote because they are afraid of being killed. Lots of them are afraid to join the NAACP because they'd be afraid to lose their job and have to go hungry.
Secretary for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. At present, I'm working in Greenwood, Mississippi, in Lower Fulton County, on voter registration. Our present activities are the distribution of the food, which has been sent from the north as an emergency relief. We feel that this particular food will serve the needs of the needy to the greatest advantage. I think that they are very appreciative of this, and I think that they have care and are concerned about them.
Well, if you won't go, $99 drone is now available in the U.S. This is an extremely high-tech $5,000 drone. It was developed so that Navy SEALs could...
And the young people there is hope. Many of them have dropped out of school for a year or more to work as field secretaries for the Student Nonviolence Coordinating Committee, going into the rural areas of the South to register people, to teach the people how to register and vote, and to use the franchises as an effective means of change. They exist on $10 and $15 a week, living with the people, working with the people, trying to build new horizons for tomorrow.
I, as a young Negro of Mississippi, feel that feel not wanted, because due to the fact the white people of the South, they don't seem to understand the younger generation of Negroes. We want to put up with the president of our situation. It makes any Negro who is sensible kind of angry when he hears any president acts a Negro. Why do you want to do this, do that? Why do you want to vote? Why do you want to go to the University of Mississippi? Well, I think that the Negro should be able to choose his own institution as the white youth when he finishes high school. I think that the Negroes should be treated just like the white. I think when I will finish high school, that I will try to enter the College of Ole Miss as if James Smith.
My name is Emma Bell. I'm from McCall, Mississippi. I'm 19 years of age. I'm a field secretary for the Student Nonviolence Coordinating Committee. I'm working on voter education program in Greenville, Mississippi.
I feel that the Negroes in the South, especially the younger ones, would like to have the same opportunities and privileges that any other American citizen would have. And living within the system of segregation, they are aware that this cannot ever exist. Therefore, they are willing to work and fight much harder to do away with segregation.
The reason why I'm in the movement in the South is because I think that things have gotten to the point where people have to do things for themselves. They've got to stop depending on the federal government or the state governments or even their local governments to secure their rights for them. They've got to act to win the rights that the Constitution guarantees them. People must make up their minds that if they want to be free and if they want others to be free, then they've got to do something, something beyond just giving money or just casting a vote or just wishing others well. But they've got to put their bodies in the movement, as we say. They've got to get out on the front lines, and they've got to do something for themselves and for other people.
My name is James Jones. I'm 20 years old. I was arrested in Jackson, Mississippi for participating in the Freedom Ride. So I was preaching the peace and sent to Parsons Penitentiary. While being there 2 weeks, we heard the girls singing on the other side. So we asked one of the trustees what was wrong. He told us that the guard had taken the girls' mattress. So we decided that we would protest that same night. We all started singing. The dad came down and put us in solitary. Solitary is about 6 feet wide, 7 feet tall. He put 27 of us in the solitary. And that night, one of the fellows panicked. Another guy fainted, and so we decided we would cool down and ask the guards and ask the sheriff to let us out. So he let us out, and now that I'm out of Parsons Penitentiary, I'm now working on voter registration in Sunflower County. Parsons is located in Sunflower County.
Smiling, I will see them start, gonna stare at you and
freedom until this battle is won. Oh, which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on? Oh, tell me how you stand it. Oh, tell me how you can. Will you be an officer or will you be a man? Lord, which side are you on?
Project in Mississippi, Robert Moses.
Young people working with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC as we call it, are characterized by restless energy, radical change in race relations in the United States. The world is upset, and they feel that if they are ever going to get it straight, they must upset it more.
My name is Charles McLaurin. I work in voter registration in Sunflower County. On January 25th, 1963, I went to the mayor's office in Indianola, Mississippi. The purpose was to see if there were any laws on the books that forbidded voter registration activities in the city. The mayor jumped from his seat and said, "You black son of a bitch, don't you come in here arguing at me." I told him that we were there to do voter registration and that if there were any laws that forbid it to let let me know. And he said no. I turned and walked away. And he called me back. Said, go out and teach everybody in the town. I don't care. But if you go into any churches, I will cut off the tax exemption.
My name is Jesse Harris, and I participate in voter registration in Mississippi Delta. It was during 1962, I was arrested in Jackson for contempt of court and fined $1 fine and 30 days in Hinds County Farm. The first time I was beaten was in Hinds County on the elevator. When officers asked me my name and where I was from, and I told him I was from Jackson. And so he beat me and he hit me side the head in the back. And the second time I was beaten on the Hinds County Farm, because he asked me where was I was from also, and I told him Jackson, and he said, are you one of those freedom riders? And I told him I didn't know where it was, so he beat me. And the third time I was beaten was on the county farm because I refused to move a 200-pound log. And the fourth time I was beaten because...
My name is Hollis Watkins. I participated in a demonstration in Macomb, Mississippi, and was arrested for breach of peace along with 115 other students, while a mob waited on the outside. After being questioned, I was carried into a room where a police officer came in and got a rope and said, okay, nigga, get up from here and let's go. We're going to have a hanging here tonight, and you're going to be first. I looked at the officer as he looked at me, and then he walked out.
I'm Samuel Block, field secretary for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I've been working in Greenwood, Mississippi, with Florida County. My purpose of being in Greenwood is to teach the Negroes their duties and obligations and responsibilities of citizenship and the constitutional form of government. By doing this, I teach how important ballot is and voter registration. When my first trip to the courthouse, I carried 8 people up to register. I was met by the sheriff. He asked me where was I from. I told him I was a native Mississippian. He said, yes, I know that, but where are you from? I told him I was a native Mississippian, around in here someplace. He said, well, what county? I said, well, around here, some of these counties. Well, he got angry. He spit it in my face. He walked away. He turned around and came back. He put his finger in my face. He said, look. He said, I know every nigga and his mammy around here. I actually didn't know any colored people. He looked at me, and he spit it. Walked away again, and he came back. He said, look, I don't want to see you around here no more in this county. I want you to leave town, pack your bag, and leave town right now. Get out of town. Don't let me catch you around here no more. So I wasn't frightened. I looked at him. I told him, well, Sheriff, if you don't want to see me around here in town no more, the best thing for you to do pack your bags and leave, because I'll be here. I knew that I wasn't leaving.
Today in 1963, the fight to enjoy the rights of first-class citizenship is still being waged in this country. The needs of the people on the front line are great. We need typewriters, papers, money for food, anything that you can find that is useful. If you can find anything that is useful, it can be sent to Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, 6 Raymond Street, Atlanta, Georgia. Help us, who have fought for so many years, to make the world safe for democracy. And I fight now to make democracy safe for the world.
Go
to say thank you for tuning in to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show here this Thursday. Wow. What do you say after watching something like that? I guess for me, I can't speak for no one else, but for me, I have to watch these things to keep myself motivated. I think one of the problems is that we, as African people, we do not tell our own history. This is pure as you, what you're seeing tonight is pure as you're going to get. It's because you're getting it from the horse's mouth. A lot of our children right now to go to this European school, Western school system across the country, unless you're into an HBCU college or something like that, you're not going to get this type of history right here. People, our African brothers and sisters who are in the Caribbean, Jamaica, they know more about American history and slavery than we do. And it's sad because I talk to Jamaicans and they say, you know, they said we don't have this racism in our country like America has. This is all new to us. The Holy Spirit told me something the other day that what's going on in America is all about money. That's all it's about. It's about the haves and the haves not. African people were brought over to this country for one reason. One reason only. And they called us slaves. But it was about money. It was about making white folks rich. While we were making white folks rich on their plantations, our ancestors still had enough courage, fire in their belly to even still go and build their own communities. Even after they still worked as slaves coming over here on boats, we still are people that are still here in America. After all of the torture and police brutality and the hanging and the lynching and the rapes of our women and the cutting out the babies of our impregnated African sisters, the sex plantations that were created to breed black people and black women, and then to take their child. I mean, the history is so deep. And there's people right now don't even want to talk about it. They say, oh, man, I don't want to talk about history, man. Well, leave that stuff alone. Knowledge is power, right? So if our children don't understand why they're in the condition that they're in, but the oppressor children know why we're in the condition that we're in, then we cannot really have a strong change in society because they're always controlling the narrative. We have to control the narrative. That's why myself, I'm unapologetic, right? You're right, I am a freedom fighter. You're right, I am a revolutionary. As a matter of fact, you know, I think it's important that we all don't like to talk about death, but when you come by my tombstone, when it's time for me to cross over to the other side, you best believe it's going to say revolutionary on there. The revolutionaries were the ones who actually made the change in America. It wasn't the middle class people. That's why it trips me out right now when I look at people in Fresno. They come from the hood, grew up in the hood. The hood took care of them, put them through school, through high school. As soon as they go to college, they want to move to the white side of town. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. Because 9 out of 10, they don't want you there anyway. Look at what happened to Trayvon Martin. He was in a gated community and still got killed. So you become educated, you get a little money in your pocket, and all of a sudden you're better than everyone that you grew up with. I don't understand that type of behavior. So Fannie Lou Hamer, Mississippi, and people wonder why I call Fresno Mississippi. We're still dealing with voter suppression today. You know, and the best person that talks about voter suppression is Aline. And I hope to get her on the show one day. She really understands voter suppression. So people died for us to vote. And there's some people I talked to said, man, I don't care nothing about voting, man. That's their choice. But I'll tell you this. There were people tied up on the railroad track and the train ran over them because they were trying to register people to vote. Megan Edwards worked for the NAACP. Mississippi and Alabama and Texas. Mississippi, I have to put them in order. Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas. All those southern states over there was brutal to black people and still brutal today. I'd like to welcome everybody to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show tonight. Just talking about this is Women's Month, Women's you know, for me, it's always every month is Women's Month as far as I'm concerned. But I just want to show you something real quick here, and we're going to cut this off because I don't want to do like an hour. That's it. But this Saturday, we're going to be showing Hidden Colors. I bought the series 1 through 5. We're going to be watching number 5 this Saturday at 11:30. Our children are going to be coming out. I gave them homework assignment because I'm running a Saturday school right now. And last week they gave presentations about Black Panther Party. They gave presentations about Black Wall Street, and they gave a presentation about and so, you know, it's good stuff for us to learn, because if we don't know what happened in the past, then the past will repeat itself, right? And what I'm going to show you right now is Bull Connor. This dude was just off the chain. I mean, I don't know where he come from. But anyway, he's going to show a little bit of him real quick.
Can never whip these buds if you don't keep you and them separate. I found that out plenty. You've got to keep the white and the black separate.
In May of 1963, one individual in Birmingham, Alabama, reinvigorated the wilting civil rights movement. Bull Connor, Birmingham's Commissioner of Public Safety, ordered the use of fire hoses and police dogs to quell demonstrations pushing for desegregation in Birmingham. In an ironic twist, however, by defending segregation so fervently, Bull Connor actually called national attention to the civil rights movement and dramatized its goals. His violent actions brought the immediate end to segregation in Birmingham, solidified his legacy as a symbol of bigotry, and, most importantly, hastened the passage of major civil rights legislation. Starting in the 1950s, dramatic changes began to sweep the entire nation. Following the landmark decision in Brown v. Board of Education in 1954 and the success of the Montgomery bus boycott in 1956, America found itself amidst an ever-strengthening civil rights movement. In 1962, however, the movement met its first significant setback in Albany, Georgia. the Albany movement was largely a failure. Because it lacked a clear-cut focus and failed to arouse an aggressive response from the police department, the campaign stalled. In August of 1962, the leader of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., left the city of Albany. According to King, the Albany movement's aims were so vague that we got nothing, and the people were left depressed and in despair. Although King left Albany crestfallen, he quickly refocused his attention on finding a way to regain momentum. King and other civil rights leaders sought someone that would display to the world the grim reality of segregation in the South. It didn't take long to find such an individual. Born in 1897, Theophilus Eugene Connor achieved local fame in Birmingham after dropping out of high school and becoming a baseball radio announcer in 1921. Due to his booming voice, Connor earned the nickname Bull and eventually became, according to one publication, one of Dixie's most popular announcers. In 1934, Bull Connor launched his career in politics by becoming a member of the Alabama House of Representatives. According to Connor, he ran partly for the fun of it and partly to see how many friends I had. Despite his superficial motives and modest beginnings, Connor eventually would become one of the most infamous men in the South. By 1963, Connor had already gained his reputation for defending segregation at all costs. Over the past two decades, he had dominated Birmingham's political scene. Serving as the Commissioner of Public Safety, Connor controlled both the police department and the fire department. Connor frequently used his power to enforce Birmingham's stringent segregation ordinances, or, as he referred to them, our way of life. Bull Connor's Birmingham had become an international symbol of segregation and racism. The city was referred to as Bombingham for the numerous unsolved bombings by the Ku Klux Klan during Connor's reign. In 1962, Connor ordered the closure of over 60 of Birmingham's parks rather than follow a court's order to desegregate public facilities. According to Dr. King, Birmingham was the most thoroughly segregated city in the United States. After the failure of the Albany movement, local civil rights leaders implored Dr. King to make Birmingham the next target of the civil rights movement. The Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth told King, "If you come to Birmingham, the movement can not only gain prestige, it can really shake the country." With such a strong incentive, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference began planning for the campaign in Birmingham. It would be called Project C, for confrontation.
Hey, I have a feeling that if we can get a breakthrough in Birmingham and really break down the walls of segregation, it will demonstrate to the whole South, at least the hardcore South, that it can no longer resist integration.
Since African Americans comprise 40% of the consumer population in Birmingham, the SCLC decided to target segregation primarily in the business section of the city through economic boycott and prolonged demonstrations. The leaders of Project C also hoped that it would serve as a template for future resistances in southern cities. According to Shuttlesworth, "We wanted confrontation, nonviolent confrontation, to see if it would work on a massive scale, not just for Birmingham, for the nation." After small-scale demonstrations in April, the leaders of Project C decided to use a revolutionary new tactic. The final phase of the movement would focus on mobilizing hundreds of Birmingham youth. On Thursday, May 2nd, the first children began demonstrating. By the end of the day, Bull Connor and his police force had arrested 959 children, ranging from ages 6 to 18. Over the next few days, Connor continued defending segregation at all costs.
"Do you think you can keep Birmingham in the present situation of segregation?"
"I may not be able to do it, but I'll die trying."
Connor ordered his police and fire departments to use dogs and hoses to crush these massive demonstrations. To counter King's tactic of nonviolence, Connor pledged to fill the jails. By May 7th, Connor and his police department had already jailed over 3,000 demonstrators. The situation in Birmingham worsened as Connor proceeded with his relentless attack on the demonstrators. Local business leaders began to change their minds about segregation. Because of the economically crippling effect of the boycott and the state of race relations, the Senior Citizens Committee, a group that represented the majority of Birmingham's businesses, agreed to desegregate lunch counters and hire African-American workers. Announced on May 10th, the Birmingham Agreement struck an enormous blow for integration. Bull Connor's extreme actions had clearly backfired, but his violent actions would eventually backfire even more.
Bull Connor switched counseling behavior and positions, allowed the press to be able to focus earlier on
happening within a movement extremism.
Over 200 reporters from local and national media outlets captured Connor's segregationist tactics in pictures and video. The stark contrast of vicious dogs and high-powered hoses with young children dramatically stirred the nation's conscience. As Connor attacked the Birmingham Agreement as capitulation by certain weak-kneed white people, President John F. Kennedy began preparing for a monumental address to the nation. Previously, Kennedy had taken a rather lackluster stance on civil rights for African Americans. However, Bull Connor's alarming actions in Birmingham had alerted Kennedy, along with millions of other Americans, of the dire situation in the South. On June 11, 1963, Kennedy delivered an address on civil rights to the nation.
Now the time has come for this nation to fulfill its promise. The events in Birmingham and elsewhere have so increased the cry for equality that no city or state or legislative body can prudently choose to ignore them. This week I shall ask the Congress of the United States to act, to make a commitment it has not fully made in this century to the proposition that race has no place in American life or law.
Using the momentum from the events in Birmingham, over 250,000 Americans participated in the March on Washington in August of 1963, rallying behind a cry to pass the bill. A year later, President Lyndon Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The act, which was originally proposed because of Bull Connor's aggressive defense of segregation, outlawed segregation in schools, public places, and employment, and was an enormous step towards equality between different races. On March 10, 1973, Eugene Bull Connor died. By this time, Connor had lost nearly all of his political power and remained in the minds of Americans as a racist leader in the South. But for the civil rights movement, Connor was so much more than that. Connor became the quintessential representation of racism and prejudice in the South. By pledging to defend segregation at all costs, Connor was the perfect individual around whom the civil rights movement could rally. His attention-grabbing actions were of the utmost of importance for the movement. 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, Connor's use of fire hoses and police dogs on demonstrators not only caused the immediate end of segregation in Birmingham, but also triggered a sequence of events from Kennedy's proposal of a major civil rights bill to the March on Washington that directly led to the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Connor's story demonstrates how one individual's actions have the power to influence popular opinion and call attention to inequalities in our world. After Connor's downfall, one periodical discussed his influence in Birmingham. Without Bull dominating the Birmingham scene, race relations in the city would have been far in advance of what they are, for in season and out, he gave encouragement, aid, and comfort to the intellectually prehistoric mass mobs who have shot, bombed, and persecuted Negro citizens in an effort to thwart their advance to full manhood status. What this author could not understand, however, was just how crucial Connor's role was in advancing race relations in not only Birmingham, but in the whole nation. Connor has been called the perfect adversary because he embodied all of the ugliness of segregation in the hardcore South. Pictures of his racist actions alerted the nation of the inequality in everyday life in the South and led to an unanticipated revival in the previously wilting civil rights movement. Reflecting back on the events in Birmingham, President Kennedy remarked on the importance of Connor in the civil rights movement. He said, "The civil rights movement should thank God for Bull Connor. He's helped it as much as Abraham Lincoln."
All right, there you have it. There you have it. There you have it. We're going to go ahead and sign off tonight. We just wanted to show you those few documentaries there. Go on YouTube, type in Fannie Lou Hamer, type in Bull Connor. We just want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight. It's 9:30, and we don't want to keep you on there too long. You know, a lot of you got to go to work tomorrow, and I do too. We got a long day tomorrow. Got to look for a lot of paperwork tonight. But anyway, we just want to thank you all for tuning in to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. This is Women's Month. March. Today is March 10th. We're looking at Fannie Lou Hamer. And so check her out. Check her out and see what you find. All right. We thank all of you for tuning in tonight. Share this on your Facebook. Do some homework. Hope we can make it out this Saturday at 1130 at 806 Collins to watch the Hidden Colors number one. And we want to see Book Reports that comes back with our views. All right, Hotep, power to the people.